Our Vaishnava philosophy stresses, especially at our stage, that we understand what the different stages of progression are. So these two verses don't actually cover the totality of the different perspectives that one can see the stages of the development of devotional service. They simply cover two perspectives or a few perspectives. But still, this should be helpful for us. Also in Prabhupada's lectures, he sometimes explains these stages in different ways. So the two verses are the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, verse number 10. And the Bhagavad Gita 7:1. So, would you like to read Bhagavad Gita from? Chapter 4, text number 10.
There's some good point.
Yes.
Vitaraga bhayakrodha manmaya mam upashtrita bhavo jnana tapasa putamat bhavam agata. Translation. Being freed from attachment, fear, and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they all attained transcendental love for me. Purport by Shantalka. As described above, it is very difficult for a person who is too materially affected to understand the personal nature of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Generally, people who are attached to the bodily conception of life are so absorbed in materialism that it is almost impossible for them to understand how the Supreme can be a person. Such materialists cannot even imagine that there is a transcendental body which is imperishable, full of knowledge, and eternally blissful. In the materialistic concept, the body is perishable, full of ignorance, and completely miserable. Therefore, people in general keep the same bodily idea in mind when they are informed of the personal body of the Lord. For such materialistic men, the form of the gigantic material manifestation is supreme. Consequently, they consider the Supreme to be impersonal. And, because they are too materially absorbed, the conception of retaining the personality after liberation from matter frightens them. When they are informed that spiritual life is also individual and personal, they become afraid of becoming persons again, and so they naturally prefer a kind of merging into the impersonal void. Generally, they compare the living entities to the bubbles of the ocean, which merge into the ocean. That is the highest perfection of spiritual existence attainable without individual personality. This is a kind of fearful stage of life, devoid of perfect knowledge of spiritual existence. Furthermore, there are many persons who cannot understand spiritual existence at all, being embarrassed by so many theories and by contradictions of various types of philosophical speculation, they become disgusted or angry and foolishly conclude that there is no supreme cause and that everything is ultimately void. Such people are in a diseased condition of life. Some people are too materially attached and therefore do not give attention to spiritual life. Some of them want to merge into the supreme spiritual cause. And some of them disbelieve in everything, being angry at all sorts of spiritual speculation out of hopelessness. This last class of men take to the shelter of some kind of intoxication, and their affective hallucinations are sometimes accepted as spiritual vision. One has to get rid of all three stages of attachment to the material world: negligence of spiritual life, fear of a spiritual personal identity, and the conception of void that arises from frustration and lack. To get free from these three stages of the material concept of life, one has to take complete shelter of the Lord, guided by the bona fide spiritual master, and follow the disciplines and regulative principles of devotional life. The last stage of devotional life is called bhava, or transcendental love of Godhead. According to Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, 1:4, 15-16, the science of devotional service. Adoshada tatha sadhu sangata bhajana kriya, tato narta nivritti syat, tato nishta rachistata, atasaktistato bhavas, tata prema budanchati, sadhakanam ayam premna, praduobhave bhavet krama. In the beginning, one must have a preliminary desire for self-realization. This will bring one to the stage of trying to associate with persons who are spiritually elevated. In the next stage, one becomes initiated by an elevated spiritual master, and under his instruction, the neophyte devotee begins the process of devotional service. By execution of devotional service under the guidance of the spiritual master, one becomes free from all material attachment, attains steadiness and self-realization, and acquires a taste for hearing about the absolute personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. This taste leads one further forward to attachment for Krishna consciousness, which is matured in bhava, or the preliminary stage of transcendental love of God. Real love of God is called prema, the highest perfectional stage of love. In the prema stage, there is constant engagement in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. So, by the slow process of devotional service, under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master, one can attain the highest stage, being freed from all material attachment, from the fearfulness of one's individual spiritual personality, and from the frustrations that result in void philosophy. Then, one can ultimately attain to the abode of the Supreme Lord.
Thank you.
This is the verse that follows Janma Karma Chumedi Vyam Evam Yoveti Dattvitaha Tyatva Deham Panarjanma Naiti Mam Eti Sarjana. The one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving this body, take birth again in the material world, but attains my spiritual abode. Prabhupada said that this is the most important verse in the Bhagavad Gita. That's 4.9. The word used is tattvataha, one who knows Krishna in truth. So our aim is that we actually want to meet Krishna. And that means tattvataha, to actually personally meet him. And here it explains that there are different classes of people who don't need Krishna. But not only there are classes of people, but we have to understand also that we have certain anarthas. And what are those anarthas? Here it says, Vita Raga Vaya Krodha. So lust, fear, and anger. Can anyone say here? Probably once said that. I'll repeat it. Can anyone say that they never are lusty, fearful, or angry? So these are called anarthas. So, of course, lust comes from this material attachment. So it says here that people in general are so much absorbed in the bodily conception of life that when they hear about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they cannot accept that he has a spiritual body. They can't even begin to understand how the Supreme can be a person with a spiritual body. Sometimes you meet people on the street. I remember when I first started to do book distribution, I meet these little old black ladies down in Buffalo on the street. We were just, because they were so nice, they'd immediately take a book and give a dollar. A dollar was a lot of money at that time. And I would always say, this is a book about God. And they go, God? I know God. I love him. I love him. Which was nice, but of course if we asked them who God was, they had no idea who God was. So similarly, sometimes they have a picture of God. I saw one Christian tract that handed me in an airport one day. I had a picture of God, and he was on this big throne, and this little soul was approaching him, offering his respects, and God had no face. This is his idea. He has no face. He's just a big body. No one has ever seen the face of God. That means he has no face. So this is due to lust. Because we're covered by lust, therefore we have a bodily conception of life. And due to this bodily conception of life, Atmanam Manite to God, we can't conceive of anything that's better than we are. Therefore, we think that God must be on our inferior platform than we are. He can't be greater. Because we have this body with its limitations. Therefore, God, if He has a body, He must be limited like our body. So this is lust. Lust is the illusory energy of Krishna that covers one's intelligence so one can't understand. But due to lust, due to attachment to this body, automatically one becomes fearful that whatever we have here, whatever we're hankering to possess now, in the future we become fearful of losing. Isn't that right? If we think about what is the one thing we don't want to lose, sometimes we may become a little frustrated losing our car keys or even our bead bag. But what is the one thing that if we lost, we'd actually feel the most terrible about? Yes.
Body?
Yes, we lost our body. Most people have already lost their minds. But if they lost their body, I consider that quite distressful. So as soon as one becomes attached due to lust, immediately there's some fear. And that fear, here it says, fear of a personal spiritual identity. A spiritual identity. So this is on another level. And due to this fearfulness, one feels some frustration because it all seems useless. Here I am, I'm hankering for so many things, and as soon as I get them, I'm fearful of losing them, I'm lamenting, and therefore one becomes angry. So here it says frustration, and the ultimate anger is the frustration from the void conception of life, that it's all useless. So this more. This more or less summarizes the major anarthas that people feel. There are frustrations. We're hankering to enjoy in the material world, and sometimes we're lamenting because we're going to lose something, and then we become angry. Lust, fear, and anger. So Krishna consciousness is the process by which one can become free from lust, fear, and anger. And what is the process? Here it mentions that by becoming Krishna conscious under the guidance of a bona fide devotee of Krishna, or spiritual master. So in the next verse we'll read. I'll just recite the verse.
Maya dakshena
Sri Bhagavan Vacha Maya Shakti Manaparta Yogam Yunjan Manashaya Asamshayam Samagramam Yata Gyasasi Tachinu. Now hear from me, O son of Pritha, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. Now the Purport Prabhupada writes that in the seventh chapter, the nature of Krishna consciousness is fully described. Krishna is full in all opulences, and how he manifests such opulences is described here within. Also, four kinds of pious people who take to the fortunate people who take to the process of Krishna consciousness, and four kinds of unfortunate people who never take to Krishna are described in this chapter. In the first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, the living entity has been described as non-material spirit soul capable of elevating himself to self-realization by different kinds of yoga. At the end of the sixth chapter, it is clearly stated that the steady concentration of the mind upon Krishna, or in other words, Krishna consciousness, is the highest form of all yoga. By concentrating one's mind upon Krishna, one is able to know the absolute truth completely, but not otherwise. Impersonal Brahma Jyoti yoga, one is able to know everything completely, namely the absolute truth, the living entities, the material nature, and their manifestations with paraphernalia. This concentration of the mind upon Krishna, the Supreme, is made possible by prescribed devotional service in nine different forms, of which Shravanam is the first and most important. I think I skipped it.
What did I skip there in the beginning of the chapter? One should therefore begin yoga practices directed in the last verse of the sixth chapter. Concentration of the mind upon Krishna the Supreme is made possible by prescribed devotional service in 9 different forms, of which Shravana is the first and most important. The Lord therefore says to Arjuna, touch Trinu or hear from me. Therefore, by hearing from Krishna, one gains the greatest opportunity to become a perfectly Krishna consciousness person. Therefore, one should begin to hear from Krishna or from his devotee in Krishna consciousness, and not from a non-devotee upstart puffed up with academic education. Then it says something about this process of, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the first canto, second chapter, it is explained. Srinvatam Swakata Krishna Punyashravanam Kirtana Ridyan Taksto Hiya Vajani Viduno Ti Saritsatam Naishta Prayesh Bhavadreshu Nitya Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki Tara Jastamo Bhava Kamar Lova Dayashchaye Cheta Etana Vidam Stitam State Prasidati Evam prasana manaso bhagavat bhakti yogataha bhagavat tattva vijnana mukta sangasya jayate vidyate hridaya granthi sthityante sarva samshaya shriyante chasti karmani drishta eva atmanishvare. To hear about Krishna from the Vedic literature or to hear from him directly through the Bhagavad Gita is itself righteous activity, and for one who hears about Krishna, Krishna is dwelling in everyone's heart, acts as the best-wishing friend and purifies the devotee who constantly engages in hearing about him. In this way, the devotee naturally develops his dormant transcendental knowledge. As he continues to hear about Krishna through the Bhagavatam or from the devotees, he becomes free from the modes of ignorance and passion. He becomes fixed in the devotional service of the Lord. And by the development of devotional service, one becomes free from the modes of ignorance and passion, and thus material lust and avarice should diminish. When these impurities are wiped away, the candidate remains steady in his position of pure goodness, becomes enlivened by the process of devotional service, and understands the science of God perfectly. Thus, bhakti yoga severs the hard knot of material affection and enables one to come at once to the stage of a samshayam samagram, our understanding of the Supreme Absolute Truth, Personality of Godhead. Therefore, only by hearing from Krishna or from his devotee in Krishna consciousness can one understand the science of Krishna. So here we find that our main business is to focus our consciousness upon Krishna. That the more one is able to focus one's consciousness, or as Prabhupada writes, the art of Krishna consciousness is the art of giving one's love and focusing one's attention upon the Supreme. So the more we can focus our attention on Krishna and give our love to him, then the more one becomes free from these anarthas, these unwanted conceptions of life. That was what Sridhara Maharaj is speaking about this morning, that there may be some misconceptions that we have, as the devotee asked the question. But if we simply take to the process of Krishna consciousness, understand Sambandha Gyan, the perfect knowledge about our position, about the Supreme Lord's position, the material nature, etc., and then try to give our love to Krishna, understanding him, then the result is that all these anarthas, they become cleansed away. And as the anarthas become cleansed away, then one becomes steadily engaged in devotional service. Devotional service does not become such a difficulty. In other words, in the neophyte stage that we're in, devotional service is generally a fight against the material energy. Especially those who do book distribution sometimes, one will find out that Maya is generally not encouraging us. Yeah, go out there and distribute those books, get them out, you know. Everyone wants them, you know. They're all spirits. No, Maya is usually saying, don't go out there, it's dangerous. You never know who you're going to meet out here. There's a lot of demons. They don't like the devotees. You have a bad reputation.
Don't tell them what the book's about. It's the last thing they'll want to tell them. Just make sure they don't find out who you are. So generally, this question, I remember, just to give some personal experience, I used to, when I was in Austin, Texas, I used to drop off the devotees on Sankirtan. I had a small temple, and our main business, our only business, besides taking prasadam, doing little kirtan, was to distribute books. So I used to drop the devotees off on Sankirtan, on the different parking lots, and then it was my turn to go out. So as soon as, I remember for a little while there, as soon as I tried to get out of the van, immediately Maya said, "Stop, you're tired. You don't know what's going to happen to you out there. Besides that, if you go out there, you'll be more tired. And if you go out there and you're more tired, then you're going to drive back, you may crash the car. So sit down for a while. Besides that, you don't feel very well. Your mind's a little agitated. You have so many responsibilities. You deserve a break. Sit down and read. Find out what you're doing." Then I think, all right, maybe I can sit down and read. But they go, "Wait, before you read, you're hungry." It doesn't matter if you take prasadam now, because you just do it regularly every time. This time, it's all right. I think, yeah. And besides that, you're an anxiety. Take a little prasadam, you'll feel better, and then you can read a little bit. You can go out there with more enthusiasm, more sense. So then I usually take prasadam. And afterwards, I go, "Wait. You can't read. You can't understand what's in the books. You're too tired. You'll never be able to understand. Take a little nap. Don't worry about anything. I'll wake you up." Just take 10 minutes. I promise I'll wake you up. Then I take a little nap. An hour and a half later. "Bye, you didn't wake me up." "I meant to. You were so much asleep, I didn't want to disturb you. You needed the rest." And I think, wow. Wait, just don't worry about it. Just take a little bit more prasadam and relax. There you go. "Listen, but I only have like an hour left before I can figure everyone out." "Well, read for half an hour." So in this way, my day would go. Until sometime later, I think, oh my God, every time I go out there, it's the same thing. So then one day, I finally decided, I stopped the car and just jumped down. And started to distribute books to people. And then, you know, then gradually, it's not that Maya completely went away, but I found another technique for dealing with her. So the idea is that Maya generally won't encourage us. But we have to understand what Maya is doing to us. And then after a while, when we see, wow, I'm just like a puppet in Maya's hand, she's pulling this way and I'm going that way, she's pulling this way and I'm going that way, then we become a little determined to find out, to do the proper thing, to do what Krishna would actually be pleased seeing us do. So the idea is that we want to focus our attention upon Krishna, and at the same time, that we want to give our love for Him. So at first, at least, we have to, I remember sometimes I go out in book distribution, and he's distributing to some people out in the parking lot, and I become a little bewildered. Especially if people didn't take for some time. All these lousy karmis, they deserve to go to hell. They have no interest, because they're so sinful. I'm trying so hard to be out here to help these people, and all they're going to do is give me a bad reputation. So when I go back to the temple, they'll read my score off, and they'll say, "Wow, we thought he was empowered, but where's his potency?" It's all there. So I sit down and read. I remember I start reading, and I read the same purport again and again and again. And by the fifth or sixth time, I'd say, oh, because my mind was so bewildered, I couldn't understand what Prabhupada was saying. It's so confusing. But by the fifth or sixth time, it would say, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and everyone is His eternal servant. So that by the time my mind was peaceful enough to understand what the purport was, I realized that all it was saying, not all it was saying, but it was saying that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, and that everyone is Krishna's servant. I remember one time I had to understand that. I jumped out again. I started saying, here, take one of these. And people, because of the, I was a little more determined, enthusiastic. They go, oh, yeah, sure, what is it? You know, how much do you want? So the point is that first, when we can focus our attention upon Krishna, when we become convinced that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that we should actually think of Him, we should actually be His devotee, that we should offer our respects to Him, and in this way, we'll actually become Krishna conscious. So here it says that the steady concentration of the mind upon Krishna, or in other words, Krishna consciousness, is the highest form of all yoga. By concentrating one's mind upon Krishna, one is able to know everything, but not otherwise. So this is the understanding of Krishna consciousness. Well, it's one of the understandings, is that we should learn the art of thinking. First of all, meditating on using this body in Krishna's service. Seeing, I remember one time Srila Prabhupada wrote to me, and he said that that business of pleasing Krishna, he said, while you're doing your service, you should think of how what you're doing is pleasing to Krishna. So this was, he probably wrote that to me in 1974. And I couldn't understand what he was talking about. But now I can understand a little bit better. Is that while we're doing our service, we should actually meditate upon how the service is pleasing to Krishna. How Krishna is being pleased by it. And that way we'll naturally think of Krishna, and the more we can feel Krishna's happiness, the more we sense Krishna's happiness, then the more we make advancement in Krishna consciousness. Because the real happiness of the soul is to feel Krishna's happiness. Is that clear? Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he came for three confidential reasons. Does anyone know what those three confidential reasons are? That's not the truth.
He wanted to understand what it was about himself that was so attractive to him. And he wanted to understand this happiness that she derives from serving him. And he wanted to understand the sweetness of that, no, the special quality in that. No, the special quality in him that attracts herself.
So he wanted to experience the love, the pleasure that Srimati Radharani experiences by loving Krishna. And also the special qualities that Radharani is attracted by in Krishna. And also the experience of experiencing Krishna's love that Srimati Radharani experiences. So similarly, we should also try to do the same thing. Experience our own loving propensity towards Krishna. If we're actually trying to love Krishna, then we'll actually appreciate more our own loving propensity. Just like if a person in the material world, if he falls in love with someone, then he actually feels good. That's supposed to be the perfection of materialistic life, is to fall in love with someone. But also he feels good by experiencing the love of the person he's loving and experiencing the qualities of that person. So the same thing holds true in the spiritual world. The only difference is that in the spiritual world the object is Krishna, and in the material world the object is some illusory understanding of what's going on here. Is that clear? So our art is focusing one's attention, and this is mainly what our art of devotional service is about. And the first business is, as Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita, is to see how we're doing some service and to see how the service is pleasing to Krishna. It's not that we're actually the doer, but still we have the, somehow or another, we're connected, that if the body is doing something for Krishna's service, that's the result of the desire of the soul to do some service for Krishna. Of course, the soul's love and service attitude is not independent. So at first there's some faith that I should serve Krishna, and then sadhu sangha. How to serve Krishna, how to develop how to develop that love for Krishna, that feeling for Krishna, that's obtained in the association of devotees. Adal Shada. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he says that in the beginning, Shada means hearing from the devotees about Krishna, about the living entity, about the relationship between the living entity and Krishna, and becoming faithful, believing in this. And then, in the association of the devotees, sadhu sangha, one learns the practical art of how to develop Krishna consciousness. And that practical art is manifested in Bhajana Kriya. And sadhana. But what is the major sadhana in our movement? What are the major sadhanas in our movement? What was your name?
Atmaswarup.
Oh yeah. But how does that manifest in a practical way in our movement in terms of our daily program? Yes. Anything else? Raghavira?
I was going to say the main one is chanting 16 rounds.
Yes. Yeah. And what else?
I was just going to say the morning prayer in the beginning.
Anything else? Yes? Yes, ma'am. Yes.
Preaching.
Believe it or not, book distribution is sudden. I just want to know. I brought it in one lecture in 1968 in Los Angeles. It's called Escaping the Limits. I guess. There he says that you should go out and distribute these books, this knowledge to others. He says that is your sadhana, that is your austerity. Escaping the Limits, LA 1968. So the sadhana means that process by which the mind is fixed upon Krishna, because that's our major sadhana, is to fix our minds upon Krishna. So Rupa Goswami is, or in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it also says that, how does that verse go, that one should always remember Krishna and never forget him? Smarta vyaksada tam deshnur, vismarta vyak jatu natin chit, sarva vidi nisedyas yor etayor eva kinkara. So our major sadhana is always remember Krishna and never to forget him. And everything else we're doing are assistance to help us do that. So this is our Bhajana Kriya, the morning program, and then preaching, or for those who are not directly preaching, distributing books or preaching directly about Krishna, to assist the preaching somehow or another. Either, of course, if one is a householder, then he should raise his family in Krishna consciousness, and he should give some portion of his income to the help to assist the spreading of Krishna consciousness. And then, by this Vaishnava Kriya, that anartha nivritti. This is very important stage in devotional service, anartha nivritti. Because unless there's an art and a vritti, then who's going to become enthusiastic, continue on with the process of devotional service? If we're always, where is the result if there's no purification? If we keep on executing bhajan, but we don't go anywhere. Just like that famous story of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada and the bridegroom party, they were crossing the river for the marriage ceremony, and they were all seated, sleeping on the boat, and the bowmen were rowing all night long. And when they woke up in the morning, they saw that they hadn't gone anywhere. And then they found out that they had forgot to pull the anchor in. So what is the anchor? The anchor principle is, we said, as we read in the first verse, fear of a personal spiritual identity, attachment to the material conception of life, and the frustration which arises from the void conception of life. So this negligence of spiritual life, thinking, just like in the airport or anywhere in the parking lots, if you're trying to preach, you go, excuse me, sir, and they go, no time. They're always in a hurry. They're going there and there. Sometimes you see the people, they're running by, they're going in the airports, they're going, no time, I have no time, I got to catch a flight. They run this way. And then you see them 5 minutes later, they're running that way because they went the wrong way. And then 5 minutes later, you see them running that way. And then running this way. And finally, you find them in the shop looking around all the t-shirts and trying to figure out what to buy. And then they see you again. They're running. They go, no time! I'm going to catch my plane. So because people don't believe that, they think, you know, these guys are, some people, everyone has their own conception, but some people, they think, oh, these are guys out here, they're trying to make a buck like everyone else. You know, but I don't want any of those books. I have enough of them. And other people are thinking, well, they're just wasting their time. They go, what? The people walk by and say, hey guy, why don't you just get a job or something? Go to work. Do something important for society. You know, like, make some bullets and tanks. Do something productive. So most people, they don't believe that there's such a thing as spiritual life. Or if they think that spiritual life is just a panacea to cover over the ills of the distress of knowing that you have to leave your body sooner or later, or some imagination on the part of people. But they don't really, deep down inside, believe that there's such a thing as spiritual life, or that there's a spiritual personality. Therefore, they're completely negligent of spiritual life. They'll work hard day and night to make money, but they won't spend 5 minutes to hear about Krishna or about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. All they do is simply reject it. I don't have time. I don't want to hear it. And others, they are fearful of a spiritual personal identity. They believe in spirit, but they're not very receptive to the idea that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They believe that they're spiritual beings, but they think that, you know, ultimately we're all one, you know, we're all the Supreme, that I'm the Supreme, you're the Supreme, he's the Supreme. Of course, they don't really believe that, but they have some vague philosophy like that, because they never really practically apply it. It's like Saradhani Prabhu, once he met one of these people in Mayapur, and they said, it's all one, everything is one, we're all the Supreme. So at night, it was very cold, and this person stayed over. He was an impersonalist, but he stayed over in Mayapur. So it was freezing cold at night. So he came to Saradhani and asked him for a blanket. So he gave him a little piece of blanket that big and gave it to him. And he said, what? Is all you got? He said, well, it's all one. It doesn't make any difference. You know, the big blanket, small blanket, they're all one. Because his practical application of the philosophy changed. Because like many times I met people at our Sunday feast in different places. You know, one time meeting a person at the Sunday feast, and he said, no, it's all one, everything, we're all one, it's all
So he said, oh, you mean I am you and you are me and everything that we have is the same. And he said, yeah, of course, it's all one. So he said, well, you know, you right now, that car you have is actually mine. But somehow or another, you have the keys to it. So he said, all right. So he gave me the keys to his car. And he said, do you have anything else? Put it on your wallet. Because actually, you know, your picture is actually me. So he gave me his wallet. I said, thanks a lot. I said, what time are you going to go back to my home? So he said, give me back my wallet. I said, no, it's not your wallet, it's mine. So then he became very disturbed because he thought I was actually very serious taking his wallet in his car. So he demanded it back. I said, but you said it's all one. Why do you care? You gave it to yourself. So he completely changed his philosophy. He was like, give me back the car! So cool down, you know. You see, you're not really disturbed. I'm not disturbed, you're not disturbed. So an origin of Riddhi, without understanding these things, the last thing it causes is frustration, that it's all for nothing. Because everyone lives with that idea that whatever I'm doing is all temporary, therefore it has no real meaning. So people invent philosophies that actually it's just like Sartre and Camus, this existentialism. Their philosophy was that the ultimate perfection of life is to kill yourself. That is, don't let Maya kill you, don't let the material energy kill you, do it yourself voluntarily. So this is the ultimate and void philosophy, is that the ultimate purpose of life is to kill yourself. In other words, life has no meaning, there's no purpose, so you might as well do yourself in, because what other meaning is there? So one has to become free from these anarthas, these conceptions. Because due to these conceptions, all our faulty activities come about due to these three major misconceptions of life. And by doing that, one comes to the state of nishtha. One can engage in devotional service and not be disturbed by these materialistic conceptions. And if one does that, then we won't be deviated. And finally, one comes to realize Ruchi, that Krishna and things related to Krishna, they're full of pleasure, prasanatma, they're full of bliss. That is that, as we'll learn later on, that there are different stages of one's ability to actually visualize and experience Krishna and his transcendental name, form, quality, and pastimes according to one's stage of advancement in devotional service. So ruchi sita, and then anta shaktis, asakti, to become attached to Krishna. That after one actually acquires taste, then attachment follows after that. And that's mayaya shaktamanaparta yogam yunjanmanashraya. So these can of course be broken down, that from the state of Krishna says, mayaya shakta, just with a mind attached to me. And mayaya shaktamanaparta yogam yunjan. So you should practice yoga. So the beginning is practice. And that yogam yunjam anashraya, and to take shelter amid, asam shayam samagramam ita gyasasi tat shunu. So the process is by hearing about Krishna, practicing hearing and chanting, or in the beginning hearing about Krishna, the result is that one becomes qualified to practice devotional service. And then by the practice of devotional service, in the right way, one comes to have the mind attached to Krishna. That's called asaktis. These are sambandhagyan, avideya, and prayojana. Sambandhagyan means that we're trying to learn to hear about Krishna, and we hear about Krishna enough, then we put into practice what Krishna is saying, and by putting into practice what Krishna is saying,
then we're able to actually experience Krishna. Krishna reveals himself to us, and as Krishna reveals himself to us, our natural love for Krishna is awakened. Shravanadi Shuddha Chitte Shravanadi Udoy. That the love for Krishna, which is natural, dormant within our heart, is awakened. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sara Kavanoi Shravanadi Shuddha Chitte Shravanadi Karya Udoy. And then asati, the mind is attached to Krishna, and from there comes bhava, or feeling, and then comes prema, or real love. Any questions about this? Yes?
Should we try to pull out an analysis consciously, or just concentrate on doing and chanting and not be revealed?
Of course, if we can concentrate on hearing and chanting, then automatically the anarthas go away. Because the main anartha is those things that take us away from hearing and chanting. But as far as our practical service goes, if we recognize that we have an anartha, then it's destroyed by the weapon of knowledge. And how to get that knowledge? Therefore, we're hearing about the philosophy and chanting. That's the only one. So probably recommended, for instance, we have a morning program, we're trying to hear about Krishna, and then we go out and chant about Krishna. When we're preaching, or even if we're doing some work in relation with Krishna, giving the results to Krishna, doing for Krishna, then this is also chanting about Krishna. This is glorifying Krishna by our activities. And the result is that if we're actually doing it sincerely to please Krishna, and Krishna reveals himself, and naturally the anarthas go away. But anartha means, Mayavi was saying, don't do it for Krishna. Don't do it all for Krishna. I mean, you need a little security. I mean, what's going to happen, you know, if this happens, you know, the stock market crashes, there's a depression, is Krishna going to come and feed you? Is he going to put a house over your head? Is he going to come on Garuda and take you away? You know, you put a little aside for your more than you need for your security, because, you know, it may be true, this philosophy, but it may not be true. Watch out for number one, and it's not Krishna. It's you. Or, Maya says that, you know, ultimately, you may get something out of this, or you may not get anything. You never really know, you know. A lot of people, they took to this process, and after all, they gave it up, and look at them. They don't have anything. So Maya will try and trick us in so many different ways. Mostly, the major anartha of the material world is envy. Everyone is envious. Everyone is looking at everyone else and thinking, he has something that I don't have. So we're thinking not that we want to do something to please Krishna, we're thinking, I'll do something to get what he has, or what she has. And then we think, well, if Krishna can help me, then I'll serve him. In other words, he has what I don't have, and how am I going to get it? So sometimes people think, let me take shelter of Krishna, and he'll help me get these things. So that's another type of anartha. There's a better type of anartha than simply being envious and trying to get what someone else has. Is that clear? Anything else? So, we have around 5 minutes. I'll read something from Prabhupada's lecture. Unfortunately, I don't have the tape. Does anyone have some tapes of Prabhupada here? I'm sure you all have some. There's one. Yeah, it's good. This is Prabhupada in... he's speaking in 1976 in Vrindavan, here in India. This is Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.27. First of all, you come to Krishna... I'll see if I can get a copy of this tape. Does anyone have that tape? You know? It's Vrindavan 1.7.27, 1976. Prabhupada's talking about how bhava in relationship to worshiping the deities. He was saying that just like the deities here, they're being offered nice flowers. But in some temples, they offer garbage flowers to the deity. But they don't think there's anything wrong with that. Prabhupada was explaining, Subal Vilasvaru was asking Prabhupada, why is it that there are so many temples that are being closed? And Prabhupada explained that also in India, there are so many temples being closed, that the dog goes into the temple, he just pats his stool, the monkeys come in, they do their thing. He said, because they've lost their bhava. He said, just like me, if you come up to me and you offer me some garbage flour, what am I going to think? He said, therefore you're offering fresh flowers. So the same way the deity, if you offer him some garbage flour, he may not protest, but your life will be finished. That will be his protest. The protest will come like that. So who can worship Krishna with this feeling of bhava? It has been explained in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, what is bhava? If you don't have any bhava, you are a kanista adhikari, simply showing off. A show cannot go on very long. The show will finish up very soon. So if you don't keep this feeling of bhava, so we may, this is our philosophy of Krishna consciousness, comes out that we actually have to give some bhava, some feeling towards Krishna. Not that it's simply an official movement, I have my official position on the movement, you know, I'm moving up in the ladder, it's just a matter of time, everyone else will recognize me, and then my life will be successful. At first I was simply an ordinary devotee, and then I got initiated, they gave me second initiation, they made me the temple commander, now I'm becoming the vice president, soon I'll be the president, because no president lasts for very long anyhow. Then after that I'll become the regional secretary, the BBC, the guru, and who knows? Anything's possible. So many avatars. But our real goal is bhava, to give some feeling to Krishna. It doesn't matter from what position. The Prabhupada says, first of all, you come to Krishna consciousness. Some of you, not everyone, may have some faith. You may think this Krishna consciousness is very good. Let us join. Many people come with some faith, meaning small faith. But according to our Goswami literatures, that faith is not just little faith. That faith is also very strong. Then beginning is there. Chaitanya Charitamrita describes Shraddha, Adal Shraddha, Sarva Dharma Parityaja. Krishna is asking, he demands. So when we have faith, faith in the word of Krishna, yes, I shall do whatever, then Shraddha begins. Otherwise, there is no Shraddha. If you have got faith in the words of Krishna, whatever he says, accept it. Ordinary Shraddha means you go to this or that temple. Kali, Durga, they say, everyone is all right. Yatamat, tatamat. Whatever you like. That is not faith. That is whims. Shraddha means that you believe firmly in the words of Krishna. Krishna says, give up everything. I shall give you all protection. Yes, it's a fact. Very firm faith. Not flickering faith. So when you have got, you have this type of faith, you want to maintain it. Then you have to mix with devotees and always be engaged in Krishna's service. Therefore, these temples are required. That the devotees will always be engaged in Krishna's service. And those who have got faith, they will come and see how the devotees are being engaged, how they have sacrificed their life just for pleasing Krishna. That is Sadhu Sangha. Therefore, we've constructed all these big temples. Why? That the people, the ignorants, the rascals, if they have a little faith, they may come and live here. Take whatever prasadam is available and associate with the devotees. Gradually their bad habits will disappear. The next stage is Bhajana Kriya. The devotees are serving Krishna. They have gotten shaven heads. They wear neck beads. They are chanting. I should also do that myself. That is Bhajana Kriya. Then they will ask for initiation.
I'm not eating meat anymore. These are some regular principles that you must accept. Then automatically, anartha nivritti syat. We don't require all this the nonsense. Just like smoking, it's unnecessary. Does it mean that if I don't smoke, I will die? But you see in the whole world, millions of dollars of cigarettes are being sold. Does it mean if I don't eat meat, I will die? I have seen in the Western countries, because I observe everything, they eat meat very little. But because everyone is eating a little meat, big slaughterhouses are being maintained. They can give it up, a little bit of meat. Just take some nice paneer. But these rascals, they won't do it, because they're rascals, and they have to kill. Killing means you are implicated in sinful activities, all unnecessary activities. So we restrict this. Sex life is required. That is all right. Be a gentleman. Get yourself married. Live husband and wife peacefully. Have two or three children. Now they're making impositions. You cannot have more than two children. Just be sterilized. This is rascaldom. They should learn how to have sex, not more than twice or thrice in life. But no, sex life is so strong that even though the child is born, he has suffered, he is calling, crying for food, etc., still they want another. They know the answer. After sex life, illicit or illicit, there is so much trouble. Therefore, brahmachari life is safe life. No troubles. But those who are not trained up, they suffer. And they do not know how to stop the suffering because they have never gotten trained up as brahmachari. So just be sterilized, use contraception, and kill the child. More and more, and more implicated. They don't by killing the child. What? They don't, something. What type of karma they'll get? Behind this killing of children, so much trouble is there. Neither the mother nor the father know about this. So in this way, if you do not take to Krishna consciousness, you will get more and more implicated. You cannot avoid it. That is impossible. God's nature is working so nicely. I have given several times the example that if you catch some disease, it must develop and you have to suffer. There is no excuse. Similarly, if you associate with the modes of ignorance and you commit some sin, the result is that you have to suffer. Karna guna sangasya prakrite kriyamanani. It is the nature that God's machine works so perfectly. It will act, you cannot avoid it. Therefore, we should be careful. For the sake of spiritual advancement, we should know why these things are unnecessary and not important at all. There are only four things. No illicit sex, no meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication. No one dies from it, but it's a habit. So in this way, we have to mold our life. And the Krishna consciousness movement is the best process. Therefore, those who are sinful and atheists are a little afraid of our movement. We have made so many enemies, especially in India. The papers are criticizing in so many ways, and in other countries also. So we have to face this danger. It is not really a danger because we don't care. We remain sincere in our actions. There will be no obstacles. Ahaitukiya pratiyata. It is certain, ascertained, that the Krishna consciousness movement cannot be checked provided we stick to the principles. Savaipum sam puro dharmo. If you stick to the principles of bhakti yoga, nobody can check it, and we will progress. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. We'll stop there. And tomorrow, please read the second chapter of the Madhuri Kandambini and the other reading assignments.